You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
This is Ashley Winch in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And I'm Kat Gunther from White Lake, Michigan. You're listening to the Quarter Horse Podcast for August 19th. Good morning, Horse World.
You're listening to the Quarter Horse Podcast, where we explore the versatility of the world's most popular breed of horse, the American Quarter Horse.
Kat, it's always so fun to sit with you and geek out about our favorite thing, which is, of course, quarter horses.
Yes.
Not that we don't have other hobbies, which we totally do, but none of them are as fun, frankly.
I agree. I agree with that statement. That's true.
Full send. And today I'm super excited to learn from some greats, talk about quarter horse breeding. Everybody knows what a quarter horse looks like. And of course, I've heard of some different sires. Like for me, you know, the bells always go off when I hear a Zippo Pine Bar.
Yep. I feel like that's the classic.
Me too. Like you got it. Like Zippo is synonymous with the modern quarter horse. And so we have some really fun guests coming on the show today. We have Katie Van Slyke, who if you are on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, you might see her. She has 4 bazillion followers, and she is a wonderful representation of the modern breeder in the quarter horse world, and I'm looking forward to my conversation with her. And then we also have joining us Roger Landis, who is a bit of a legend.
Yeah, it seems like his experience really spans a lot of the quarter horse showing. Every class you can think of, really, he has experience in, and he knows how to breed them for those classes. So I'm excited to talk to him, too.
It'll be really neat. I feel like we're like half in a time machine, which I'd like to pop in now with you, Kat, and talk a little bit about the history of bloodlines and breeding in the quarter horse that got us to the quarter horse that we're all familiar today.
Yeah, of course. So just a little bit of the basics. Let's take it back. So the American Quarter Horse originated from a mix of English thoroughbreds and the hardy Spanish horses of the Chickasaw Indians. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Resulting in a compact, heavily muscled, and all-purpose horse used for field work and racing, which that's kind of where the whole quarter horse name came from, is because they could run over, I think it was a quarter mile distance.
Correct.
Yep. Quarter horse. Yep.
So we're talking sprinters here, not long distance, like a thoroughbred race, which is over a mile, I think. I don't know. This isn't the thoroughbred show, so I don't have to know that.
It always makes me laugh, though, because I think to my quarter horse, who was a Zippo, you know, Zippo, Kathmandu, he would never run that fast in the history of the world. Like, I can't imagine him bolting a quarter mile. Like,
We had my first horse, I guess, technically, that my mom and I shared. She was an off-track quarter horse racer, and she could go. She didn't have much woe. It's something else.
Yeah, I feel like you get a mix. You either get the quarter horses that are like all go, no woe, or all woe, no go.
100%.
There's no in between.
And so that was way back then. And around 1940 is when the American Quarter Horse Association, that we all are very familiar with, was founded. And the first registered horse, a very famous stallion named Wimpy P1, who was born on the legendary King Ranch, which some of you driving Fords, I think they have the King Ranch version of the Ford truck. So you're driving a piece of history. And so Wimpy P1 was born in Texas, and he was the prime example of the quarter horse type, powerful, stocky, and calm. And his genetics are actually still a huge part of any modern quarter horse pedigree, which is really cool.
That is really cool. And another monumental stallion was King P234, which I think this is so funny, the names.
I know. Like
Wimpy P1.
I'm glad we've gotten a little bit fun.
We got a little more creative.
Yes, I'm glad.
Yes, but we'll call Mr. King P234. We'll just call him King.
I love it.
He was foaled in 1932, and he had impeccable conformation and a natural cow sense. His descendants dominated early cutting and roping competitions and continue to excel in these events, making him one of the most significant sires in the breed's history.
Okay, so we have Wimpy P1, who is our whoa quarter horse. We have King P234, who's our cow guy. Then, as we mentioned before, we said Zippo Pine Bar, who was actually going back related to Three Bars, which actually came through a thoroughbred. Three Bars was a foundational sire in the quarter horse world, and his foals were, of course, known for their speed, and he became a key ingredient in many successful racing and performance bloodlines. His son, you guys might know, Doc Bar, is another giant of the breed. Doc Bar himself was not a racehorse, but his offspring had incredible intelligence, agility, and a strong cow sense, becoming legends in the cutting and reining arenas. So it sounds to me like Three Bar, Doc Bar, that line is more of an all-arounder type.
Yeah, and then Zippo Pine Bar came out of that, and then
right.
He created some really cool all-around horses. So
that's right. That.
Yeah. And finally, we have horses like Joe Hancock and Driftwood. I have to say, these are probably my favorite names. I've never heard these horses before, but they're more so associated with like the working ranch horses of the West. So their bloodlines are known for their strength, stamina, and ability to handle the demands of ranch work and rodeo events. I have to say, like I said, Joe Hancock, I think he wins.
From a naming perspective, yes, only.
Yes, he's won the name competition here on the Quarter Horse Podcast.
That's so cool. You know, all this history really goes to show why today's quarter horse is celebrated as one of the most versatile and popular horse breeds in the world. You know, looking back historically, they really do have a little bit of everything peppered in to make them as versatile as they are, so they can do whatever we ask of them. And that's why we love them.
I agree. I couldn't say it better.
Well, with that, let's go chat with Katie. Hey there, listeners. Just wanted to pop in quickly to let you know that today's episode was recorded a few weeks ago, and just before this show dropped, we learned of the unfortunate news that Katie's foal, Seven, who many of us were keeping up with on Facebook, had passed away. I think the University of Tennessee College of Veterinary Medicine said it best. Baby Seven's life was a testament to hope, compassion, and the tireless dedication of everyone who cared for him. We join Seven's family in mourning his loss. It's my pleasure to introduce Katie Van Slyke, a true horsewoman who many of you might know from social media. Growing up on a farm and now living across the street from it, Katie is deeply rooted in the quarter horse community. She's not just showing on the AQHA circuit, she's actively involved in every step of the breeding process, from birthing and raising foals to weaning them. As the owner of the legendary VS Code Red, a multiple World and Congress champion stallion, and her up-and-coming 4-year-old stallion, Denver, Katie brings an unparalleled depth of experience and insight into the genetics and the performance of these incredible animals. Get ready to hear about the daily realities of farm life, the excitement of the show pen, and the wisdom gained from a life dedicated to quarter horses. Welcome to the show, Katie.
I'm so excited to be here. Honestly, hearing that, I have such imposter syndrome. I'm like, what am I doing here? I don't actually know what I'm doing. This is, someone else should be giving their insight on this, but I'm excited. So hopefully I can give some insight onto some things. But honestly, like, I still feel so new to it. So like the fact that you just said I was the owner of VS Code Red and it's been almost 2 years, it still is like a shock to me.
I love it. And you know, I think you're not doing it right if you don't have imposter syndrome. I think that imposter syndrome is the sign that you're on the right path.
I still feel like I'm 12. I'm like, why am I an adult? I get, this isn't right.
So, Katie, let's start with what initially drew you to quarter horses and how you got into showing.
I actually started showing on the POA circuit, so the Pony of Americas.
Yes, those little spotted things.
Love them. And I do believe they have quite a bit of quarter horse influence. Like, I remember showing against girls who their horse, you know, their ponies looked like little horses. They weren't what you think about a squatty little pony. They were absolutely phenomenal. And they would have quarter horse lines, or they'd, you know, a small POA mare would be bred to a smaller quarter horse stallion to introduce that quality of genetics. And so I grew up showing POAs, you know, doing a little bit of 4-H. And it was not until I was 13 that we had the opportunity to buy this older quarter horse gelding, and he was my introduction. And, you know, I'd kind of showed him a little bit in 4-H at home, and he was kind of this older, quote unquote, blown up gelding. Like, he didn't, he had all the goods at one point, but he was just kind of like spazzy and would chee-chee all the time. And it's like, he had the buttons, but and I was trying to learn them, but just because he had the button didn't mean he was going to do what, you know, you said. And so I was trying to kind of figure him out, because I think I got him when he was 18. So he had been there, done that for a really long time. And at one point had been a competitive all around horse. But at the point that I got him, he was very grumpy and very did not want to do it. And so I went to a clinic that was hosted by Karen Evans Mundy, who is, I believe, still the all-time winningest amateur in AQHA history. She's won the AQHA All Around at the World Show 8 times, I believe. And so I went to a clinic put on by her that was local. And when she saw me riding Zip, his name was Zip Rebel and Roll, she was like, I see the potential here. I think we need some lessons. Call me if you'd like to, you know, work together and come over for some lessons. And so that kind of blossomed into my entry into the quarter horse world. So it's been 15 years since that happened now, 16 years. And it, you know, I can't even believe all that's happened within that time frame. But that was my introduction. My parents did have quarter horses, but we had like foundation type ranch horses and dabbled in barrel racing breeding. We had an appendix mare that would breed to barrel stallions. And so we had a couple of barrel babies and things like that. But as far as my quarter horse experience and showing, that's how it started.
Your first quarter horse sounds so much like my show horse, Teddy. I got him when he was 18, and he was the quirkiest dude. I was just telling Ashley about this. I'm like, I feel like that's a canon event that equestrians go through.
And yep. And they're both red. So
I love it. I
remember
so
Teddy.
Oh yeah, he was my baby.
Was it Zippo's Kathmandu?
Zippo's Kathmandu, the love of my life. Rest in peace, Teddy.
they're special. They teach you a lot for sure.
Oh yeah, quirky dude, but I loved them. Mm-hmm. So when did you get involved with the breeding side of things? When did that come about?
So, you know, as I said, we did have babies as I was growing up. So like we had a couple of POA babies. We had quite a few of more, like I said, foundation type quarter horses, and then got into a little bit of the barrel futurity world. I never had the running gene. So like I tried to have a barrel horse. It was not in there. I was always meant to go a little on the slower side. So like while we had those babies, I didn't really honestly do a whole lot of the work with them, and I was in school and, you know, and so I just knew the kind of, I wasn't really in the breeding process of it until I was in college, because all of the barrel horse stuff, all of that, you know, my mom would get a few mares, breed them, she'd sell the babies, she'd trade them or whatever. And so we always were kind of in, they were in and out as I was growing up. So I was there for the foaling, I was there for all the process of it, but I wasn't necessarily involved in any decision making or any of that. And so I knew I loved it and I wanted to learn more about it. And my mom had gotten to the point where she was like, I'm kind of done doing the hard part of it. I don't really want to do this anymore. And we had a mare named Beyonce. Her name's Kay and Brandy Girl, and I still breed her to this day. And she had injured herself after we had purchased her to show. And so her show career was over. And we were like, well, we've always bred, you know, barrel racing babies or foundation babies, but we've been showing the all around, we've been showing the Western stuff for years now, but we've never done a baby. Why don't we breed her? And that'd be kind of like our entry point, since she can't show anymore. And so the first year my mom kind of handled like finding the stud, 'cause it's her mare and, you know, all that good stuff. And then I that was my first kind of time doing the foaling myself and spending so much time with that baby and raising it. And so that baby's now five. We did try to breed her the year prior, but she miscarried kind of late on. And I did have a filly that we purchased an embryo from someone we knew at that point. And we're not necessarily that horse's breeder, but I did raise a filly. I think she's 10 now. And that was like my first time foaling out one that I thought I was going to show. So there's just been like a slow, you know, kind of introduction into the Western all around and the hunter under saddle baby realm, because that's not what I grew up with. But so that's been about, I guess you could say 10 years ago is our first like AQHA all around baby. And she's now one of my brood mares and love her. She's my girl. Her name's Hot Pistol Annie. Her sire's Hot and Blazing, and her dam is a Congress champion pleasure mare named Vested Wishes. And so she's currently bred to my young stallion Denver now. And then after the, I guess, 5 years ago, that first filly that we got on the ground and, you know, kind of went through all the motions with, it kind of just went from there. We started like the next year we had three, the next year we had five. And then, you know, so we just kind of built from there.
I love that. And I have to also make a confession that I too am a more woe than go girl. So I just want you to know I see you. You're welcome here.
All of us here, when we talk to jumpers and barrel racers and they're like, we love speed, we jump high. I'm like, I like to go slow, all 4 feet on the ground.
Well, and you know, it was like, I'd have the prettiest little barrel pattern that would be 25 seconds.
Right. But it looked good.
My mom wanted me to be a barrel racer so bad because that was her passion. That's what she was good at. And so I always had a barrel pony. I always like I had a barrel quarter horse mare at one point that we leased, and it wasn't there.
Yep.
But you know, we had to try.
You do. And you found your calling, and that's, you know, every step of the journey is a part of the journey. So I'd love to pick your brain. How do you determine what mares are the best genetic match for your stallions? You know, we all know that there are some pretty serious genetic diseases in the quarter horse world, right, in the paint world. So tell me about how you figure the best genetic matches. What does that look like?
So both of my stallions are six panel negative, which makes things easy for me pairing them with mares. And I will say, I think, with knowledge of those diseases, you know, you can figure out what you're comfortable with and what you're not. I, you know, have learned a lot over the last 5 years. I feel like it's been a crash course in breeding. And I feel like it's been because honestly, and I don't want to put blame on my parents at all, but that wasn't talked about when we were breeding the foundation quarter horses and the barrel horses. I was never talked about like, oh, well, if they have this, we don't breed them, because that's a genetic, you know, marker that is, it's not just one parent carrying it. Like if one parent has it, then that baby could have it. And that could be a long-term lasting thing. And so, you know, there was a lot of, when I first started getting mares, there was a couple mares that I had that, like, one of them I no longer breed, because while her genetic panel doesn't show anything, she has passed along something to two of her babies that they did not live. And so we can't figure out what that was. So I think there's some stuff that isn't even necessarily on a panel yet, because, you know, they keep coming out with new things. It seems like now that you can do eight panel, you can, you know, whereas it used to be four panel, and now so I think it's just evolving. And then I have one mare that I wouldn't have even known about this 10 years ago when I had my first little all around baby. But now that there's a little bit more education around, like, you know, not just HYPP, but PSSM positive horses and, you know, things like that. So I bought this mare knowing that she was PSSM positive. Now, here's the thing. I don't recommend doing this, because the easy road that I thought that I was going to have, I was like, oh, we have Rood and Riddle come aspirate for ICSI once a month. If I do ICSI with her, we can biopsy the embryos, and she's already had two babies that were six panel negative naturally. Like, her owners got lucky. So I'll just get a couple embryos and at least 50% of them will be negative, right? Wrong. I have had the hardest time. We had a hard time getting ICSI embryos. Like for some reason, her, which I just actually aspirated her yesterday and she gave 12 oocytes. So hopefully we get some actual embryos. But the first two times I tried it with her, which ICSI is expensive, no embryos. And so there's nothing to test. And then I had to, we figured out, okay, she gets pregnant easy. So let's do an embryo transfer, but you have to actually flush them a day early to ship it to freeze. So then we shipped it to Equiembryo, froze it, and then biopsied twice. We did it twice, and both of them had PSSM. So if, and here's the thing, I'm still trucking along on this train because I think when it does work, it's going to be fantastic. I'm breeding her to Code Red. She's a 17-hand buckskin mare with really old, old hunter in her saddle bloodlines. I really think she has very good characteristics. I like her conformation. Her movement is different. She does have a little bit more knee in some areas, but I feel like with the refinement of, you know, a really good front-legged stallion, like I think the outcome could just be absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I don't love to say that I breed for color, but I think if she does give us like a Palomino or a buckskin that has the attributes, I think it will. I just think it'll just be the coolest thing ever. And so it is important to me though, that we test those embryos now because that we have the knowledge of, you know, what a horse with PSSM could go through. I think you could eliminate it. So a lot of people probably wouldn't breed her anymore, or they would just take the chance since it's 50%, but that's kind of the route we're taking. So, you know, as far as genetic markers, it makes it easier having my stallions be six panel negative. And I do have, you know, a mare that carries Herda. Both parents have to have it to be affected by. So as long as you don't breed her to something with Herda, it's fine. And only one of her babies has ever been a carrier of it out of like eight. So I think you just need to be knowledgeable about what your mare has. I think you need to be knowledgeable about the stallions you're breeding to. And even, and this is one thing that I will say that I've seen in the industry across the board, not just one discipline, but just because a stallion posts that they're five panel negative, see what panels those are. Because if they've been tested for seven and they're not saying it, they're just saying they're five panel negative, for your mare's sake and for the baby's sake that's coming, you need to know what the five panels are actually negative for are, you know, so do some digging. And that's things, and I'm not going to say that I, years ago when I was starting off, I wouldn't have thought of that. I wouldn't have known. And so now that I do, it's like, you've got, when you have the knowledge, you've got to use it. So, yeah, as far as the genetic markers and genetic panel wise, that's kind of my advice there. But with Denver and Waylon both, I think they're both, very versatile stallions. I have to brag for a second on Waylon. So VS Code Red was the only stallion this past year who was in the AQHA standings of Western Pleasure, Hunter Under Saddle, Western All Around, and English All Around. He was the only stallion that was in all four top 10. So
he, I remember VS Code Red, and when you bought him, I remember seeing it, and I'm like, oh, I love him.
And he's very versatile, and it makes it very fun at shows to hear babies winning in the trail, in the Hunter Under Saddle, in the Western Riding, in the All Around, in the Pleasure. I mean, they're just, he had one win the novice championships in the barrels this past year. I mean, it's just really, really cool. He's a good minded guy. And so I feel like he crosses well on almost anything. Like I've seen ranch horses bred to him. I've seen a couple of reiners bred to him. I think having not only the conformation and the movement, but the mind is just so important. And so, I know there's like the magical crosses on certain stallions, you know, so for VS Code Red, I think those magical crosses are machine made, One Hot Crimson, invitation only. I'm breeding him to a Lazy Loper, you know, kind of lineage mare this coming year. I'm excited for, but yeah, I look for mares that, and I made a video about this recently about, you know, I have five babies in the pasture that all are VS Code Red babies. None of them look alike, or actually two of them look alike, but they're full siblings. The rest of them that have different mamas, they're just so different. And, you know, mare power is just so important. So you have a really high standard for stallions. Generally, you want a good minded stallion. You want them to have accolades. You want them to be good movers, good conformed, you know, sound. You need to have those same those same standards for your mares, and you need to be okay with a clone of your mare coming out, you know? So yeah. I think that too, the mares that I have in my pasture, I feel very confident with right now. I would be totally fine if a little clone of them came out, you know, if the dad's DNA just took a back seat, I'm still okay. You know,
mamas are the powerhouses, honestly.
Absolutely.
So what trends are you seeing in the quarter horse breeding world? Where is it heading?
You know, I feel like that's a really broad, broad question. I do think one of the conversations I'm seeing is, are we breeding ourselves into a corner by having so many stallions that have the same bloodlines? It's getting harder for certain mares to find stallions that aren't, you know, super closely related to them. Do we need to start outcrossing? Do we need to start limiting ICSI and breeding to, you know, deceased stallions and things like that? So I think that's a trend right now. I think the trend is asking ourselves if we need to chill out on certain bloodlines. And I have one of those stallions that is prominent. I have one of those stallions where it's like, okay, we're saturated with the vital signs, our good bloodline right now. So I think there's two schools of thought there, because you could say the same thing for like the Zippo Pine Bar, right? Like he's on everything. And so there's the people that have the mindset of line breeding brings in characteristics that are desired, and it keeps those characteristics. But I think there is need for an outcross. I think there is need to look for those. And that's why, as I mentioned before, with that mare that has PSSM, I absolutely adored that nothing on her papers looked anything like any of my studs, any of my mares, was totally different. And so that's why I'm willing to spend a little bit more money to get that baby that has that different blood, that old blood. I'm breeding one of my thoroughbred mares to Code Red this year. So she's having a Code Red baby in February. And I think that's a little controversial as well, as people are like, well, you're bringing more thoroughbred influence, but that's where the quarter horse started, with Arabian and thoroughbred and all these other things mixed together. So I think the trend is not even just in the all around or the Western pleasure world, but as a total, with access to frozen semen of deceased stallions, of ICSI, where your mare can keep showing and you can get 5 embryos in a year and have all these recips carry, you know, are we breeding ourselves into a corner, and how to combat that? I think that's honestly the trend right now, is that conversation.
I think that's very well said. And I really feel like the through line of our conversation today has been two-sided. You know, either you don't know what you don't know, conversely, knowledge is power, right? Mm-hmm. And I think as time goes on and we all learn how all of this functions on a scientific genetic level, how we can be responsible for the horses that we're working with. And so I appreciate your responsible approach to breeding. And I think it's very inspirational.
And like I said, when I first started, I wouldn't have known any of that. And I took someone's word that, oh yeah, this mare's fine. Breed her. She's
right.
Great. She's got a full sister that's out here doing amazing things. Well, then you find out the full sister is PSSM positive and has all these issues, or, you know, whatever. And so there's already a couple babies on the ground that I did without knowing that, or whatever. And so there's just, you have to give yourself a little grace, because I've given myself grace on that, of like, I truly didn't know and had no ill intent.
We all start somewhere.
Luckily for me, my babies were all clean, yeah, panel wise. I started, you know, when I started registering my babies, you click the little 6 panel, you know, testing, and then it makes it easy. Mm-hmm. And that just wasn't something that was necessarily mainstream information to me back right then. And so, and I didn't really have an AQHA breeder mentor, or, mm-hmm, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I said, kind of a crash course. And so now I think that's one of the things that social media is so powerful for, is you don't have to go work in a breeding barn to get the ins and outs of it necessarily. You can follow people on socials, you can ask questions, you know, there's just a lot more information out there online now. And then I think it's just your responsibility that when you do learn something, that you know, take that into account and change the way you're doing things, you know?
100 million%. And I could chat with you all day long, Katie, but unfortunately, we've reached the end of our segment, and we ask every guest on the show the same last question, and it is to please share with us your favorite funny story about one of your quarter horses. It could be in the show ring, around the barn. I know there's a million to choose from, and many of yours are on TikTok, but if you could think of one to share...
I think you've stumped me for a second. I might have to take a minute. I don't even think it's that funny, okay? But when I was showing, and my longtime show partner, his name was Zippin' on Top, and he was a been there, done that, super talented older gelding, and we had some success in the equitation on the flat and the Western riding, and so at the Congress, okay? I'm having the Congress of my life. I've placed in the Western riding. I've placed in the horsemanship, and equitation is me and this big guy's thing. Like, that was our thing. And we laid down a good first pattern, and we were going into the finals, and they made us trot in without our stirrups on. And I had been working my butt off to not, you know, to be able to go as long as I could without stirrups. And I felt so confident. But you know, when you sit out in the overhang at the Congress, it gets cold when you're going into the Coliseum. It gets cold. Your horse might get a little fresh. You might get a little, like, they come back. They're not tired anymore. And this 20-year-old gelding goes in there squealing his head off, ricocheting through the Coliseum. Literally, he's squealing and screaming and bucking when I have no stirrups as I go into the finals of the Congress.
That sounds traumatic.
It was. I'm having a flashback
right now. I can tell in your face, you're like, oh.
It's like, what do you even do? He's 20. He's 20. And
he can't even be mad. He feels so good.
I mean. Oh, that's the first thing that came to my head. I know there's funnier stories, but I feel like that sums up my old gelding relationships with all of the old geldings that I showed as a youth. So
I love it.
Your pain, and I feel you.
Yeah.
They're the best though. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Katie. It's been a lot
Absolutely.
Of fun.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Keep flies in check with Chewy. From fly sprays and masks to sheets, boots, traps, and even feed-through supplements, you'll find everything you need to keep your horse comfortable all season long. Shop trusted favorites like Ultra Shield, Cashel, and Simply Fly, plus tons of other top-rated brands you know and love. Whether you're protecting your horse in the pasture or keeping your barn a fly-free zone, Chewy makes it easy. Fast, free shipping on orders over $49 and all your go-to fly control essentials in one place. For a fly-free season, for the brands you trust, for fast delivery, there's Chewy. Shop now at chewy.com/equine.
Sentinel Extruded Feed is expertly formulated for mare and foal health. Just ask halter horse breeder and trainer Chris Arntzen. He's focused on raising the next world champions and says Sentinel Safe Start is a critical component for his broodmares when they're carrying and his foals as soon as they start creep feeding. Sentinel Safe Start is a highly fortified, high-protein, and high-fat feed, providing the precise nutrition to support milk production and composition in mares and healthy foal growth. That's feedsentinel.com/trusted.
Roger Landis has spent a lifetime in the horse business, beginning his career riding reiners for Paul Horn before establishing his own successful training business. A multidiscipline champion, he has won Congress championships in Western Pleasure, reining, Western Riding, and Halter. He later transitioned into the breeding industry and with his wife, Debbie Truby, owns North Farm Incorporated, where they stand influential stallions such as Invitation Only and the Lopen Machine. A former AQHA, NSBA, APHA, and NRHA judge, Roger also serves as a director for the Ohio Quarter Horse Association and is the chairman of the Congress Super Sale Committee. So, Roger, after a successful career as a trainer, you made the move to the breeding side of the business in the quarter horse world. So what kind of influenced that decision and what was that transition like?
You know, I'm the luckiest man you've ever met in your life. I had a successful training program, and the people that we were working for at the time, he bought Lazy Loper, Pleasure Horse Stud. And so we were standing him, and I asked him if he wanted to buy imitation only at the David James sale. He said, nah, I don't want to buy him. So he was going through the barns at the World Show, and Lazy Loper became a world champion at that horse show. And then he went out to David's. And after one of my friends said, yeah, you know, you should buy that horse, he bought imitation only. So that's the first two stallions that I started standing. Just a matter of luck.
Wow, I mean that's a big name you got right there. Invitation only. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yes, he was like the number one stallion every year through that year. Then Lazy was third, and then Lazy got to be the second leading sire for the year behind Invitation Only. But you know, it's not just me that made all this work. It's Debbie too, because a lot of times a stallion of the notoriety that Invitation Only had, when they go someplace else, they fall off the face of the earth. Debbie kept that horse in the world, and she made Lazy Loper too. She's the brains, and I'm the spine that carries the brains around.
Oh,
so
I
that's
love
how that worked. I just love that. Yeah.
So, Roger, specifically talking about Invitation Only and Lazy Loper, what stood out to you in their pedigrees or their confirmation that really made you want to invest in them as standing studs?
You know, if you looked at Invitation Only, he is one of the most spectacular animals there ever was. The guys that have halter horses always wanted me to breed one of those big, soggy halter horse mares to Invitation Only for an outcross. He was just a magnificent, well-balanced animal. I mean, just a freak. I mean, he looked just like his mother. His mother, he is a female version of his mother. And I don't know what kind of show record she had or anything, but He's just a clone to her. So the mothers always have everything to do with it. And Lazy is the same way. It's all about his mother. His mother was a world reserve champion, a world champion pleasure horse. And that's what made Lazy Loper. I mean, my family raised him, and I lived in Virginia, and I was coming here in Ohio for the Cecil family raised him, Rick Cecil. And he was in the pinnacles to be castrated. And every time I went there as a weanling and a yearling, Lazy be running along, and all the other colts would have their head over the fence. He'd be kicking down through the fence at you. I said, why would you castrate that thing? So my guy that I worked for ended up, they were partners with Rick, and he ended up buying him. You know, Lazy Loper was not the confirmation horse that Envy was, but he was so good-minded, and they suited everybody. I mean, there was a use for those horses with everybody. And right off the bat, his first year, he had won the Masters and won the Hero of the World Show. Lazy did. And Invitation did the same thing. They were just freaks of nature. Just good horses.
I'm glad you did not castrate him. I'm very happy you guys did not do that.
Well, I didn't, you know, he took him off. And you know, that I saw Lazy after the 10th ride. And I said, Rick, you know, if you could take your lead, you go show him. He was just a great-minded horse. Mm-hmm. So
you kind of touched on it with the mare thing. Like, what kind of role does that play? What characteristics do you look for in a mare to know she would be a good mom or carry that good mindset?
That's all luck too. But you know, it's formed to function. They have to be trapezoid in their built angle. The shoulder and the angle of their hip have to be the same. Little short cannon bones and they're wither above the girth, and they got to have some substance to them. You know, I like overall length. Debbie likes them shorter than me, but I like it overall. Everything has to be relative. The back can't be longer than the neck, or the neck can't be longer than the back. It has to have some kind of correlation. And you just look at those, and, you know, that's the qualities that you want in a mare. Is she going to be a breeder or not? You don't know, but that's what those mares were. Both those mares were great individuals.
Given that you've been in the game for a while and seen and done lots of things with your different quarter horses, what are some trends that you've seen come and go?
Okay. You know, when I became a horse trainer, I'm from Ohio, and we were the full drape, hang it to their knee. They were low-headed, too low, but they walked, trot, cantered, you know, and they were broke. I never, back in those days, I am reiner-oriented. That's what I was. And I had some people send me some pleasure horses. I rode those horses, and you know, I love the reiners, but I could make more money selling the pleasure horses to the guys in California. Sell a reiner for $3,500, and I was selling pleasure horses for $25,000, $30,000 back in the day. So I did it. It's a matter of economics why I chose the difference of the two then. But those were good. They were just good horses, and they could walk, trot, canter while they could, because they were formed to function. That's like I said, the other ones, they were short cannon bones, just ideally made. So that's, but I think that trend has kind of changed, because as we were riding those horses I had, those really good ones, they were walnut boards. And that again came to me by accident, by luck. I didn't go out and find them. The people had them. They had a horse called Sugar Bars Boy, and he was by Sugar Bars, not of her daughter Leo. And if he'd have been alive today, I'd have loved to have that horse, because it you know, back then they didn't market it. It was all live cover. But everybody else had pieces of plywood they were trying to make into walnut boards, and they didn't have the quality of animals that they have now. The horses that people ride now, there are so many great ones, and the pleasure horses, the cutters, the reiners, everything. They are. Everybody's got plenty of good quality horses, whereas we didn't in that back in the day. So they you know, and it's just a style. That's not where I was going to.
Yeah.
The guys, the old horse trainers say, "You boys are ruining them horses. They're not supposed to do that." Well, I never forced mine to put their heads down, and neither did the rest of the guys. Not really. But when the people saw what, as we were transcended people, saw what we were doing, they tried to make their plywood boards into doing that, and it didn't work. You know, they got the hop and flop and all that stuff. You know, you're only as good as what you ride. So, you know, if you have great horses, they make you look great, no matter what you are. So that trend has changed, and I think they just carried a little farther. So the style they have now, I'm not completely wild about, because it's who can go the slowest. And they start getting top canned and all that kind of stuff. You know, a little bit's good, but for me, I'm an old man. I don't really particularly care for that kind of stuff, but truthfully. But that's what it is. It's just a different style. And I'm an old man, and I'm bitching at them boys. Boys, you're ruining them horses. So there you go.
Full circle. I love it.
Yeah. Well, that's it's gone full circle. You boys are ruining them horses.
This leads to my next question. So in your experience as a judge, how has that helped you in your breeding program kind of go for those horses that move more naturally, you know, not looking to get just the slower, the better type of horse?
Slower, not always better. You know, I can remember, I was judging the Silver Classic, and there was a horse in there, and that was when they were really trying to crank those things down, and they were hopping flop. It was really bad. And this horse came in there. It was a 2-year-old pleasure. It was a big horse show back then. And he had trouble taking a lead, taking off. Well, I saw it. And I thought to myself, well, you know, he's so much better than everybody else. He had a big fault, but he's so much better. I let him win. And I didn't think the other three guys saw it. Well, they all saw it. So, and all four of us let him win. So, you know, it's those really good ones that can do that stuff because they can. They're always going to have value. And today, there are horses can walk, trot, canter, and do what they have to do. But the other guys are still trying to make and they're good horses. The other ones are better than what we had. Trying to make them be like those really, really good ones. And so it just comes full circle. It's just a different style. So you have to learn to like it or don't like it, or just keep your old man's mouth shut.
You know, I think that's a really great way to explain it, that it is a style or a trend. Yeah. And just like everything in other disciplines, other breeds as well, it changes over time. It's a very enlightening perspective. I want to pivot a little bit. I know you and Debbie are partners in life and business. How would you say your individual strengths and expertise complement each other, especially when it comes to making important breeding decisions?
I don't make any.
You are a very good husband.
that's not true. But, you know, we have a rule here. We buy a mare, and she has a. I don't even let him go. I'll let them go 2 times, and that's a strikeout for me. If they're not, if I don't like what they are, I want rid of them. And she'll want to linger on a little bit longer than me. And when I give up, she should have gave up, truthfully. So, all of this, most all of the mechanics of this, I do the mechanics. And so, other than we do decide on what we're going to breed and that kind of stuff, but I do all the maintenance stuff outside. And like I said, I'm the spine that carries the brains around. She makes all this, she does all the stuff here in the office and all that kind of stuff. And that's compliments us both because you can't do both. And
right.
Her marketing, if she had to do what I do and do what she does, she couldn't do it. It's too much stuff. So that's how we compliment each other that way.
Gotcha. So how many horses do you have in your breeding program right now?
There's probably 40, 50 horses here right now. We cut back.
Wow. What was the most you've ever had?
Oh, I don't know. Probably 100.
100? Oh, my. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, what age are the foals when you usually sell them?
Pardon me?
What age are the foals when you usually sell them?
It just depends. Sometimes Debbie sells those things 2 days old. You know, some of them are 6, 7, 8 months old. Some of them we keep till they're yearlings. You know, it's, but you know, the biggest thing around here, the reason I had to cut back is because I let them get wild, and I'm a cowboy. And so all my pens run to pens, and they're catch pens and all that. And I let some yearlings get wild. I had to go in there and rope them. And I don't ever want to do that again because I'm 71 years old. So all my babies are broke. I can walk up, I can touch them all. And I don't let anybody lead them to start with. We put a little figure eight around their chest and around their butt and lead them around like that. And if they have to go out the back of their stall in the wintertime to be let out in that pen, you put that rope deal on and you take them out and you go outside and you catch them, you bring them back in, they get handled. They'd never follow their mother. So we're their whole life, those babies. And it makes a difference. So I just think that foal management is the absolute most important. And people wonder how come ours look so good? We warm them.
Yeah.
We feed them. You know, it's
take care of them.
Yeah, you know, it's not rocket scientist. I'm not a nutritionist. Not really. I don't feed a pelleted feed. I feed corn, and the only supplement I have is growing wind in it, which I want to think that pellet works, but I feed good hay. But, you know, those mares, you keep them, it's like a bank. It takes a long time if you build your bank up. And if that mare's in good flesh the whole time that she's carrying that baby, when she has a baby, the baby's going to come out and be a – they're big babies sometimes. They're tough to foal. But then they just go on. That mare feeds, and the babies eat. And I don't wait until they're like 5 or 6 months old either. So, I mean, they know how to eat. They're ready to go, and they don't back off. They just – keep right on going. They don't ever look potty and nasty because they're not getting enough to eat, enough protein.
Mm-hmm. So that leads to my next question beautifully. For someone who is just thinking about starting their own small breeding program, what's one piece of advice that you would give them to help them succeed or avoid a common pitfall or a lesson learned?
The worst thing is I see in people, they don't feed them. You know, I have lots of friends that have horses, and we've sold them nice mares. Until I go over there and tell them, I said, you know, I have to go watch them because they don't know what they're supposed to look like, I guess. So, you need to find somebody that's going to help you find them to buy quality mares because there's a lot of junk out there. And if they aren't formed to function and have a little breeding to them, but they have to be, like I said, they have to be trapezoid. They have angle shoulder, angle hip have to be the same, and they have to have overall length underneath, overall length on top, and a good-sized heart girth, and low cannonbones. Cannonbones got to be short. George Tyler, one of the greatest old horsemen in the whole wide world, taught a friend of mine this. I knew George, too, but I never paid much attention to him when I was young. But my older buddy told me all these things, and he had great mares. So they need to find someone that will help them find the quality mare they want and listen to what they have to say. You know, that's what I do because I've done it my whole life. And if you want to know something, I'll tell you. But if you don't listen to me, then I'm not going to waste my time with you. So that's the biggest thing. They get to know it all. They need to ask somebody and get help. That's what I think.
So a mentorship, it would be your...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they need to just look around and look someone that has a successful deal and try to pick their brain. That's how I learned what I know all my life. I surrounded myself with important people or people that were of greatness, which made me look great. And that's that. I've done it my whole life. Partially... By luck, but then it all through the rest of my later life, it's by mission.
Right. Well, like that saying, you are who you hang out with, right?
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. They make you look smart.
I like that. I like that a lot. That's very good advice just in life in general.
It's true.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But okay, on a funny note, this is the last question we ask every guest. Can you tell us a funny, your favorite funny story about your favorite quarter horse?
Favorite funny story.
It stumps everyone, so don't feel bad.
I don't. You know what my favorite all-time quarter horse is? I have a horse I bought, a guy I bought from him when I was training reiners. His name is Bob. And Bob has done some really stupid, I mean, he's 25 years old and I'm 71. And I use him. I really pony break all my weanlings. I mean, they are broke to death before I turn them out, because that saves me. When I want to go down and get them, they're out there with the other yearlings. I walk up to him, snap one on one. I can take him anywhere I want to. But old Bob, he is Debbie still laughs about here. Last year, the one lady works for me came in the arena door, and Bob will buck you off. He's 25 years old, and he is cold back to the, and he will jump out from underneath you. But I just love the old dude. He's made us hundreds of thousands of dollars. We use him to chase the horses in the videos at different things. But he took off running. He took off running. And Debbie said, I got really small. I didn't fall off. I should have fallen off. And I didn't turn loose the weanling. But, I mean, he took off running. And then he stopped. We were just talking about that the other day. So that horse, I've had a lot of other famous horses, but he's famous to me. He's been my whole life around here. And I hate when I don't have him anymore. He just, you never know what he's going to do. I just can't think of, he just does, very entertaining. You got to watch him all the time.
He must be smart. That's usually what I can tell by, you know, opinionated or mischievous horses, that they're just too smart for their own good.
You know, when it was the deal, I taught him all the tricks. He could lay down, sit down. The only thing he'll still do now is he'll say yes and no. I'll ask him a question and he'll say yes or no. But he used to lay down. He used to sit up. I don't make him do all that stuff. He's old. And, you know, I'm old. He's old. We use each other. I said, I'm a little crippled. You're a little crippled. We're going to go to work anyways. I wield his name like a sword around here. Old Bob.
I love it.
He came from Howard Pitchers. Howard Pitchers raised him, and the guy I was riding horses for, and I never showed him. He was he's a 73, 70, 74, 73 and a half horse, could stop and roll back, but he's so ugly, and he was such a bad mover, I never showed him. I mean, he is broke to death. He's the brokest reiner as I've ever had, too. So he was just very comical.
I can't get over the name Bob. I love that name.
His name is Bob. Everybody knows old Bob. All my friends know Bob. I had him at the Congress, and I was poning horses for him, and he would let him stand a couple of days. He'll buck you off. I got in an asphalt there at the Gilligan building, and they said, you know, he's going to buck you off. His back is pulled up. I said, nah. I ride him out, get to that overhang, and as soon as I get the overhang, he dusts me off over his head. He bucked me off right there in front of God and everybody.
We just had someone on the show, was it last month, Kat, that got dumped right at the entrance to that arena as well. It seems to be a cursed space.
he dumped me off, and I went over top of his head. I didn't turn loose the horse I was ponying. I just walked away from him. I was a lucky deal, too. And he didn't go anywhere. He just bucked me off. And there's all kinds of people around. They laughed at me. I mean, everybody, all my friends know who Bob is.
I love that. Now we all know Bob, too, and we love him. Thank you so much for joining us today, Roger. It's been wonderful. Thanks so much for tuning into the Quarter Horse Podcast on Horses in the Morning. Be sure to like, subscribe, and tell your friends all about the world's favorite breed of horse.